It's a little easier to understand the actions of the rogue police in Chicago when you consider the city's history. Al Capone-style gangsterism has given way to a more subtle but no less powerful form of evil. In a book called The Outfit, Gus Russo probes what he claims is the role of Chicago's underworld in shaping modern America. The book is full of provocative statements, and Russo is the first to admit he can't prove many of them. But he says the evidence that exists is strongly suggestive. So, did Kennedy patriarch Joe Kennedy invite the Chicago mob to help get his son John elected president?
Two people went into this room, according to the witnesses, Joe Kennedy and Sam Giancana. The next thing that happened was the gang voted to go along with this arrangement to support Jack Kennedy. Now, one of my witnesses says that he heard later that the agreement that was made had to do with Joe Kennedy saying, if you help out in the election, I'll see to it that we take it easy on your newly burgeoning Las Vegas enterprise. And that was of great interest to the Chicago outfit.
Is there any suggestion that the Kennedy administration followed through on that?
Not at all. And this is the most disturbing part of this, is that Joe Kennedy would make such a promise on his son's behalf. And I'm certainly convinced they knew nothing of this, that he was going around making these side backroom deals. Certainly when Bobby Kennedy became attorney general, he wouldn't have gone along with it. I also talk in the book about some just knockdown, drag-out fights up at Hyannisport between Bobby and his father over how to relate to the underworld. These stories come from the Kennedy family, as a matter of fact, that Joe had been telling Bobby, leave these guys alone, we can use them, and so forth. So Bobby never went along with the plan, and you know, this kind of an arrangement was certainly jeopardizing the administration, but it got him elected.
What's disturbing in reading your book is that you make some pretty clear suggestions that this is by no means the first time this happened. In fact, I found it even more sort of unbelievable that you suggest Harry Truman was forced into the vice presidency by the mob. Can you tell me about that?
I don't know if force is the word. There was certainly influence that these men have claimed from day one that through the good offices of people like Sidney Hillman, who was a prominent labor advisor and labor leader to a number of presidents. It's well known among historians that Hillman was one of the people who convinced Truman to run. Now, the gangs will tell you, and the research tends to support the fact that Hillman had quite a connection to the underworld in New York. Now, when you go to Chicago and talk to the people who were around, what they say, and this isn't proof, I don't claim it's proof as far as the presidential ticket goes, but it's strongly suggested that Hillman convinced Truman to run because the underworld wanted Truman. The reason the underworld wanted Truman was that they could use his own checkered past, which has been written about often, in case they needed a favor. They could bring out, he was a very vulnerable president, let's put it that way, had he gotten into the Oval Office, which he did. And in fact, this did come up in later years that the gangs needed favors from President Truman.
Is there any indication in this case as well that that any favors were actually paid off once Truman did become president?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. One of the biggest scandals in the Truman administration was the early parole of the Chicago outfit members who were imprisoned for extorting the Hollywood studios, or extorting, so the court said, but it was actually a two-way arrangement with the studios. Seven of the outfit's brightest lights were put away in the 1940s during the Truman years. They were supposed to be in jail for 10 years, and Truman had them released after three against the wishes of nearly every prosecutor, the prison wardens, and it astounded everyone. It was so bad that Congress investigated that there must have been a payoff to the Truman White House, and the White House refused to cooperate with the congressional investigators, and they were convinced there was an arrangement. They just couldn't prove it because the White House wouldn't allow the FBI and the Justice Department to cooperate with a congressional investigation.
You must be pretty disillusioned about government by this point. We're working our way backward here. You even suggest that the mob helped to bring Franklin Roosevelt to power, though there's no indication that they got anything for that. Is that right?
That was according to Lucky Luciano. And again, you know, I don't want to go on the record as saying I can prove that, you know, but I think those allegations have to be made public considering the sources and the fact that when Luciano in the 1930s said Roosevelt's people came to us because we controlled delegates, it was held in Chicago, the convention that nominated Roosevelt. And as a matter of fact, when you look at the facts, they did control many delegates. And it made sort of sense when Luciano says that Roosevelt's people, not Roosevelt himself, came to us for our delegates. Then a deal was hatched that they would take it easy on crime investigations.
Now, there's no indication, though, that Roosevelt actually did go easy on crime as a result.
Oh, not at all. In many cases, these so-called arrangements that are made with aspiring presidential candidates, they don't deliver. Roosevelt was very tough on crime, so they considered that a lesson learned, and for a long time they just, you know, were wary. Many gangsters were wary of getting involved in presidential politics. I interviewed Meyer Lansky's longtime partner, Jimmy Allo, in Florida, and he told me that Joe Kennedy had come to Meyer for aid in the 1960 election, but they turned him down. They didn't trust him. They had remembered history. A lot of them said, "We remember what Roosevelt did." So they turned him down and they said, "Go to Chicago. Maybe they'll help you." And that seems to be what happened.
One of the other stories that has long been told is that Frank Sinatra was connected to the mob, and you find this completely believable, right?
Well, not that he was a gangster. What I find believable is that most entertainers, especially most singers from the 40s and 50s, had to have some relationship with these men because they controlled much of the entertainment industry. So you couldn't have not known a Sam Giancana or a Tony Accardo or a Curly Humphreys. There's no way you could not have dealt with them because they were everywhere in the business at the time. So that was across the board. Most entertainers had that relationship with these people. Sinatra's probably went a little bit deeper because he was, by all accounts, you know, a thug sort of a guy himself. He was a roughneck. He was a wannabe. He dressed the part. He kowtowed to these people. When they snapped their fingers, he came running to perform for them. And I think they helped his career at various stages. And there's certainly evidence of that in the book or eyewitness testimony that they had interceded in his career at various points.
And one of the best indications that he was willing to do pretty much what they wanted was that he actually he was a prom date once. Right?
Well, yeah, I think that's indicative. You know, a picture's worth a thousand words. And you can see in this one picture, you can crystallize the power of these men. When Curly Humphrey's daughter in 1954 was dateless for her high school prom, she was bemoaning to her father, and he said, "Well, who do you want to take you?" And she said, "How about Frank Sinatra?" You know, next week Frank Sinatra shows up and takes her, and I have the photo of their prom date in my book. And that, to me, says a lot.
Gus Russo's book is The Outfit, The Role of Chicago's Underworld in the Shaping of Modern America.